Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, May 5th, 2026. We begin on the front page with Learning to Save the World, Dual Credit Conservation Class, A Passion for Students by Matus Janique. For Pontiac Township High School seniors, Addison Harz and Lila Donovan, a class project about conservation has grown into something much more than a classroom assignment. The two students are part of a dual-credit Environmental Earth class in partnership with Heartland Community College, working on projects related to human interactions with the earth and its environment. The duo's project is tied to the 30 by 30 initiative, a global conservation effort. Through the project, Harms and Donovan have helped organize conservation-focused efforts, wrote an article about prescription drug disposal, and are taking part in developing international experiments centered on potatoes and food insecurity. Our project covers the 30 by 30 initiative, which is the conservation of 30% of the world's land and water by 2030. Donovan said. Through that, we've done a lot of conservation initiatives and involvement. One of their major efforts was hosting a summit at the school that brought together non-governmental organizations, government officials, students, and business leaders. Donovan said participants took part in breakout discussions about the importance of conserving land and water, as well as reducing waste and removing it from the environment. Harms said they also recently wrote an article about the Prescription Pill and Drug Disposal Program, parentheses P2D2, close parentheses, which was created and supported by previous students of PTHS science teacher Paul Ritter and was recognized across the country and internationally. The article was sent to the Illinois Audubon Society, which Harms said plans to publish it soon. The article explains how it got introduced and how the students in this classroom then took it to the further steps a couple of years ago, Harms said. For Harms, continuing that work felt like a natural fit with the broader 30 by 30 project. For us to carry on that project and allow more people to learn about the changes that we're making in the classroom, it's wonderful, Harms said. It's amazing that we get that opportunity. The students' latest work has also taken on an international component, though what they described as a potato growing project. It was introduced early in the school year, around October, and has since started moving forward with connections outside the United States. Donovan said the potato project is connected to food insecurity. The idea is to see whether students in different parts of the world can grow the same variety of potato using similar or different methods, then comparing the results. It deals with land sustainability and bringing that back, Donovan said, adding that the goal is to address food insecurity without sacrificing conservation. For both seniors, the class has been about more than earning credit. It has given them a way to take environmental issues they care about and turn them into projects with real-world connections. Harms said she decided to take the class after hearing positive feedback from students who had taken it the year before. They said that it was their favorite class they've ever taken in high school so far, and I knew that I had to jump in on it, Harms said. She and Donovan entered the class eager to choose a project. When they saw other students working on 30 by 30, they wanted to continue building on that effort. We knew that we wanted to make something more out of it as well and continue to keep going, keep conserving, keep inspiring educators, students, and people around the world about what we can do and how we can make a positive impact, Harms said. Donovan said the class helps students understand environmental issues while also connecting them with people and opportunities they might not otherwise encounter. You learn so much about the environment and the things that you can do to help make it a better place, Donovan said. You're connected to so many different people. Both students are preparing for life after high school, though their plans are focused on education and helping others in different ways. Donovan plans to attend the University of Alabama and major in elementary education. Harms plans to attend Illinois State University and major in communication sciences and disorders to become a speech pathologist in an early education setting. As they look ahead, both students said they would encourage younger students to take the class and get involved. "This class is life-changing," Donovan said. "To see how much you can make a difference is really amazing." Also by Matus Janik, we have Learning on a Global Scale. Course gives students more than college credit, teacher says. This is in connection with the Pontiac Township student projects. In Paul Ritter's classroom, dual credit means more than getting a jump start on college. "It means students are expected to think like problem solvers," said Ritter, a science teacher at Pontiac Township High School who teaches Heartland Community College's dual credit Environmental Earth course. The class is built around earth systems, but, as Ritter explained, it goes beyond textbook instruction. Students work in teams on projects designed to make a local difference on a global scale. "We call it mycelia," Ritter said. "Mycelia is the interconnectedness of the fibers of fungi. Basically, it's this, quote, everything is connected system mentality." This year, Ritter has 10 upperclassmen in the class. Their projects include conservation work tied to the International 30 by 30 initiative, a Route 66 bike and pedestrian path concept, a food as medicine project with locally grown ingredients, and a possible international potato growing comparison involving students in the United Kingdom and India. Ritter said he has taught for Heartland since 2000 and also teaches a night class, but the dual credit course at the high school gives students a different kind of opportunity. Heartland Community College and this program have enabled these kids to be global thinkers and problem solvers, Ritter said. "If we had not had the ability to have this class with Heartland Community College, these kids wouldn't be exploring these opportunities and those ideas." The college's now dual credit program is offered at 20 high schools and career centers in Heartland's district, according to information provided by Heartland. At Pontiac Township, students work with their high school counselor and complete Heartland's student admission process to be eligible to earn college credit through the program. Enrollment in this program can mean students enter college with credits already completed. Ritter said some students might leave high school with as many as 16 credit hours, roughly a semester of college. "That puts them at the forefront now," Ritter said. "It gives them the advantage when they go on to whatever is next, whether that's the workforce, Heartland, the military, trade school, or somewhere else." But Ritter said the larger value is what students learn by leading real projects. One group recently brought locally grown, nutrient-dense food to an OSF healthcare hospital through the Food as Medicine project, working with the culinary arts program at the Livingston Area Career Center. Students help prepare chicken and rice and ham and bean soup using ingredients sourced mostly from within 20 miles, with rice coming from southern Illinois. Another group is working on the idea of converting an unused portion of the old Route 66 road into a multi-use bike and pedestrian path. Ritter said the project has local value, but also ties into the larger symbolism of Route 66 as its 100th anniversary approaches. The 30 by 30 initiative has served as an umbrella for several student efforts. The initiative is a movement to conserve 30% of the world's land and environment by 2030 to combat biodiversity loss and climate change. Earlier this school year, students hosted a summit that brought business leaders, government officials, non-governmental organizations, and students to the school to discuss conservation, sustainability, and waste reduction. Other students in Ritter's class have been focused on vape disposal legislation, drafting House Bill 4652 to create a statewide stewardship program for electronic smoking devices. They have worked with state lawmakers, including the bill's sponsor, State Representative Kelly Cassidy, as well as State Representative Jason Bunting and State Senator Sally Turner and Doris Turner, while developing support for the legislation. These kinds of projects help students see that their ideas can move beyond the classroom, Ritter said. They have a voice that doesn't sound like any other, Ritter said. When they are engaged, active, and passionate about what they're talking about, people listen. The course also builds on a long history of student-led environmental projects at Pontiac. Ritter pointed to P2D2, a pharmaceutical disposal program started by students in 2007, as an example of how a classroom idea can grow well beyond Livingston County. Each year, he said, students look at what previous classes accomplished and try to build on it. They get better and better because they all see and know the kids from the previous year's class, Ritter said. They think, if they can do that, then I can do this. For Ritter, that is the point of the class, giving students room to create, lead, and follow through. I have the greatest job in the world, Ritter said. The greatest part is watching them fulfill those ideas and bring them to fruition. Next, from the front page, we have Durbin Lauds Amtrak in Normal Visit by Drew Zimmerman. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat from Springfield, visited the town of Normal on Monday to highlight the success of Amtrak service in Illinois and address other national topics. Durbin said Amtrak services have been critical to university towns in downstate Illinois, but in the early days there were serious questions as to whether the federal government would commit to future support. I think we have proven the critics wrong, particularly on this route, Durbin said. Amtrak is funded through the 2021 Infrastructure and Jobs Act, a $66 billion commitment to rail services over the next 5 years. Durbin has said this guaranteed funding was always meant to be supplemental to annual appropriations. However, the most recent fiscal 2027 budget proposal includes $2 billion in cuts to Amtrak. Durbin said an investment in Amtrak will trickle down to state universities and local economies. However, the domestic production of new vehicles would also help. I hope we can see a day when the actual construction of new passenger cars and trains will be made in America, Durbin said. In many cases, that is not the fact, and that's why we're at the mercy, many times, of foreign companies in providing new cars and expanding capacity for the trains that we have. Normal Mayor Chris Coos said Durbin's pragmatism and leadership has helped bring a lot of exciting new projects to Normal, including the Uptown Station and the Rivian Automotive Plant. The mayor added that Durbin will be missed in the Senate when he retires at the end of this term. I will say that I miss him when I don't see him for about 6 to 8 weeks, Coos said. Although he didn't make an official endorsement, Durbin said he supported Juliana Stratton as U.S. Senator. She'll be an asset to the state and a great partner to Tammy Duckworth, Durbin said. Durbin also addressed the ongoing war in Iran and the impact access to the Strait of Hormuz is having to fuel prices. I don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon, but I certainly look at what's happening in the Middle East and all the countries that have been involved so far, and at the great cost, continuing this effort. I think we never should have done this in the way that we did. In response to President Donald Trump's statement that congressional approval is not required for military operations in Iran, Durbin said former President George W. Bush sought approval for military operations in Iraq following 9/11. We debated this issue in the House and Senate and at the United Nations as to what we would do with Iraq after 9/11, and the decision was made to take a vote in the Senate. Matt Camp from Jacksonville Journal-Courier writes, Weather Expert Debunks Tornado Myths. Already this year, Illinois has had more tornadoes than any other state. After storms on April 27th produced 3 tornadoes in the Metro East, Illinois reached 111 tornadoes, according to AccuWeather. With activity on the rise, myths about tornadoes can lead to dangerous decisions. SIU Edwardsville weather expert Alan Black said several long-standing myths continued to be spread. Here are 5 common tornado myths and what Black said people should know. Myth: tornadoes can't travel up bluffs. There's a significant amount of research showing that when a tornado moves from lower terrain up over a bluff, it can change the storm's path slightly, Black said. Because of the tornado's rotation, ascending terrain can deflect it a bit, but we're talking about very small changes, maybe 100 feet to the right or left of its original path. It does not protect us from tornadoes. Recent tornadoes in Edwardsville, including those in 2021 and 2025, showed that higher terrain offers no meaningful protection. The 2025 tornado, which started in St. Louis, dissipated near the SIUE campus after a 23-mile path. Myth: tornadoes can't cross rivers and lakes. There's no protective effect from rivers or lakes, Black said. Tornadoes can and do cross them. There are many examples of tornadoes crossing the Mississippi River and other bodies of water. The river does not stop or weaken tornadoes in any meaningful way. The 2025 tornado in St. Louis tracked to near the SIUE campus, crossing the Mississippi River along the way. Myth: tornadoes can't touch down in cities and larger urban areas. There's no protective effect for urban areas, Black said. In fact, cities can be slightly warmer due to the urban heat island effect. Pavement and buildings absorb and re-radiate heat. There's some evidence that storms may strengthen over or just downwind of metro areas because of that added heat. The 2025 St. Louis tornado was rated EF3 with maximum wind speeds of 125 miles per hour. It was as wide as 1,750 yards. Myth: if driving during a tornado, taking shelter under an overpass is safe. Do not do that, Black said. Overpasses also act like wind tunnels, which can accelerate the wind further. On top of that, it's extremely dangerous from a traffic standpoint. Stopping under an overpass creates hazards for other drivers and can lead to serious accidents. If you're driving, get off the highway if possible and go into a substantial building. And number 5, myth: the larger the tornado, the stronger it's going to be. Larger tornadoes can cause more damage simply because they cover more area, but size doesn't directly determine strength, Black said. You can have small tornadoes that produce very intense damage in a narrow path. Conversely, very large tornadoes aren't always the strongest. Tornado strength is determined by damage, not size. A wider tornado just has a higher chance of hitting something. As storm activity increases, Black said, understanding what tornadoes can and cannot do may be as important as the forecast itself. On Tuesdays, Jerry Vogler, superintendent of the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission, writes Veterans Corner. The VA is developing a tool to analyze disability claims applications for fraud, using a Microsoft Data Analytics program to identify patterns that could indicate fraudulent activity. This tool uses artificial intelligence technology. The announcement of this new analytical tool brought immediate outcries of fear, potential abuse, unfair treatment, and almost mass hysteria among many of our national elected officials. However, what is offered as the reality of this issue of AI is projected to be much different. This analytical tool will not be used to pursue potentially fraudulent past claims, but will focus on detecting filings from companies posing as legitimate medical providers or charging veterans excessive fees for assisting initial filings. The VA Office of Inspector General said of the nearly 32,000 such claims compiled in 2022, 69% contained one or more indicators of potential fraud risk, with an estimated monetary value of $390 million. Veterans can hire VA-certified attorneys or other firms to appeal claims decisions. The law prohibits anyone from charging for assistance with initial filings. That fact has not stopped for-profit companies from stepping in, and while some may offer legitimate services, others have been targeted by the VA as bad actors. The VA has sent cease and desist orders to at least 40 companies over the last 10 years. Less than half of eligible veterans have VA health care benefits. Many veterans are denied VA health care because their income is above the income means tests. Others because their service on active duty was less than the service at the time of their discharge than required. Under the PACT Act, more veterans may be eligible for VA health care if it is determined that they were exposed to certain types of toxic substances. While the VA has many rules and policies about eligibility for VA health care, the VA emphasis on reducing and eliminating veteran suicides overrides the normal rules. The Veterans Crisis Line is the essential resource for veterans who want someone to talk to. The veteran does not have to be in immediate crisis, nor must they have the exact words for what they are dealing with, and they don't have to be enrolled in VA health care. It is available to any veteran for any reason. Just dial 988, then press 1. Chat online at Veterans Crisis Line. net/chat or text 838255. The crisis hotline is available 24/7 and is staffed with compassionate, trained people who help veterans work through what's going on, and it's free. The VA is here when veterans need them. Veterans at some VA medical centers may notice something different during their appointments. Providers are spending more time talking to the patient and less time typing on the computer during testing of a new AI-based technology. VA's Digital Health Office is here. New digital technology is called Ambient AI Scribe. With the veteran's permission, Ambient AI Scribe works quietly in the background, giving VA healthcare providers more time to focus on what matters most, connecting with the veterans. The AI technology is designed to listen, and it generates progress notes from the clinic visit and processes the conversation between the provider and the patient. Its use saves time and reduces paperwork for the provider while improving the accuracy of the visit. More importantly, it puts the veteran at the center of care. Ambient AI Scribe pilot will span 10 VA medical centers to test and validate effectiveness assessing, documentation accuracy, provided satisfaction, and workload management. Browse AI at VA and Ambient Scribe to learn more about the VA's innovative efforts in AI and digital health solutions. And the quote of the day is from Rudyard Kipling. The individual has always had to struggle to keep from being overwhelmed by the tribe. If you try it, you will be lonely often and sometimes frightened, but no price is too high to pay for the privilege of owning yourself. In election news, we have Trump blocked on voter rolls. Courts reject DOJ call for state records by Luke Cohen with Reuters. Democrats are winning legal challenges to the Trump administration's push to obtain states' voter rolls, dealing a blow to the president's effort to expand the federal government's role in elections. The Democratic-run states' victories come as their party is locked in a fierce battle to take back both houses of Congress from President Donald Trump's Republicans in the November 3rd midterm elections. On April 28th, a federal judge in Arizona dismissed a Justice Department lawsuit demanding the state's voter rolls, including sensitive information such as partial security numbers. That marked the sixth defeat for the Trump administration in such a case so far this year, after judges in California, Massachusetts, Michigan, Oregon, and Rhode Island dismissed similar cases. Litigation surrounding U.S. federal elections has become common, with Democrats and aligned voting rights groups generally challenging laws they believe restrict the right to vote, and Republicans and their allies challenging practices they say leave elections vulnerable to fraud. Trump asserts, falsely, that his 2020 election loss was due to fraud. Four of the judges who dismissed the suits, three of whom were appointed by Democratic presidents and one of whom was appointed by Trump during his first term, found that the federal government did not articulate why it needed the unredacted data to carry out oversight of state voting practices. A fifth, Trump appointee Hala Jarboo of Michigan, said the Justice Department adequately explained the basis of its request, but that the laws it cited did not require the state to hand over the rolls. In Arizona, Trump appointee Susan Brnovich also found that there was no legal requirement for the state to hand over the rolls. The U.S. Constitution assigns individual states the role of administering federal elections. The Trump administration is appealing three of its losses, and 25 similar cases are pending. Assistant AG Harmeet Dhillon, who leads the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, has said she is prepared to take the cases to the Supreme Court, where there is a conservative justices of a 6-3 majority. In a statement, White House spokeswoman Abigail Jackson said President Trump is committed to ensuring that Americans have full confidence in the administration of elections, and that includes totally accurate and up-to-date voter rolls free of errors and unlawfully registered non-citizen voters, close quote. Since last year, the Justice Department has sent letters to nearly every state seeking their voter rolls and asking for details about their procedures for removing ineligible individuals. 17 states handed over their rolls voluntarily. The department sued dozens of states, including several led by Republicans, that did not comply. In an interview with Fox News' Sunday Morning Futures program on April 19th, Dhillon said the department had reviewed 60 million voter records so far and found the names of 350,000 dead persons and 25,000 peoples who lacked proof of citizenship. Dhillon did not provide evidence that votes were cast for those names. Trump and his allies have long asserted states are not doing enough to prevent voter fraud, even though state audits and academic studies have found it is rare. Trump in February said Republicans should nationalize and take over voting without giving details of what he intends. Legal experts say the steps his administration has taken in that direction are unlikely to survive challenges in the courts. In addition to the losses over state voter rolls, three federal judges in separate cases have blocked Trump's 2025 executive order requiring proof of citizenship to register to vote and restricting the counting of mail ballots. The Justice Department is appealing. A March executive order restricting mail-in voting has also drawn legal challenges. He doesn't have the levers. He doesn't have the switch. There is nobody he can order to federalize the elections who will listen to him, said Justin Levitt, a former Justice Department elections lawyer and current professor at Loyola Law School in L.A. A Reuters Ipsos poll found that Trump's claims have gained broad traction with the American public, with 46% of respondents, including 82% of Republicans, agreeing with the statement that large numbers of fraudulent ballots are cast by non-citizens. In suing states to demand their voter rolls, the Justice Department has cited the Civil Rights Act of 1960. The law, passed to combat racial discrimination at a time when Southern states were destroying Black Americans' voter registration records to cover up disenfranchisement, requires states to preserve such records. But the judge who dismissed the lawsuit against California said the Justice Department's request went beyond what Congress intended when it passed the Civil Rights Act and other voting laws. The judge, David Carter, said the fact that the department had requested the data of so many states suggested it was seeking to build a nationwide database of voter information rather than investigate alleged mismanagement by the individual states. The Department of Justice seeks to use civil rights legislation, which was enacted for an entirely different purpose, to amass and retain an unprecedented amount of confidential voter data, Carter said. The judge said the Constitution requires that policy changes that could erode privacy and voting rights must be decided by Congress. And with that, we conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, May 5th, 2026. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.